Penitentes? What's that?
Well, it's a sect, a part of the, some of the Spanish have, of a section of the Catholic religion. I think it's a branch, mm-hmm. but they are all penitentes.
Hmm.
And the penitentes have a lot of different rituals.
Do you know how to spell penitentes? Have any idea?
I think it's P-E-N-I-T-E-N-T-I-T-E-S. Penitentes. D-I-E-S, yes. There's a lot of them yet, I guess, over in the San Luis Valley.
Huh.
And there are some over around Edith and Chama.
And you're a little 11-year-old girl just in awe, I imagine, huh? You were just...
Oh, I was. Just...
Huh.
And I don't remember if we went to we must have gone to the funeral, but I don't remember the funeral. It didn't intrigue me, so, you know, it wasn't. Although the Catholic Church, we'd never been to a Catholic Church. But it was... And this little Juanita Lujan, she didn't speak English the best in the world. She was my age, so. But see, they were all Mexican or Spanish children. And so we got started teaching each other. She was teaching me Mexican, I was teaching her English. And one day we started calling each other animal names. Well, my vocabulary ran out after a little while. I had several of these Mexican names, but not all. And I finally got to, and I called her a pig, a cochina. The man. She wasn't going to be called a cochina. I'll never forget that. And another thing, I said, I think I learned more outside than I did down there. They came to my mother and said, "Do you care if Virginia learns to dance?" Well, I had always, my family used to go to the dances out there at the Piedra. Mother said she never could get me to sleep. The boys would go to sleep, but I wouldn't. I sat up and watched her. So, Mother said, they said, the older brother could play the mouth harp. We'd like to teach Virginia to dance, because there's going to be something happen that would be nice if she could do it. Mother said, "Okay, I don't care. Because you have to do something at recess." So they taught me to dance. I learned to waltz, I learned to two-step, and I learned to polka. But they didn't tell her why, but they said there's going to be something that she ought to know how to dance. Well, just before school was out, they came. And this older girl told Mother, she says, "I'm being married. And I want you and Virginia to come up to the wedding, to my wedding." So we went up to the family. And I don't know how much you know about the Spanish people, but they still do it up to a point. We went up, and the groom had to buy the wedding dress. And everything was put into a trunk. And they had a party, a dinner. This was the day before the wedding. They brought this trunk in, and the groom's clothes and also the bride's clothes were in the trunk. I got to see the wedding dress. Well, that was quite a thrill. And they had dinner at a big time. Then there was apparently a mistake because of language difficulty, because those people weren't really too versatile in their English yet. And they thought we were going to the wedding. Well, we saw them all going out to church, but they hadn't asked Mother if we would go to the wedding. So they discovered we weren't at the wedding, and they had to go by the schoolhouse. They had little teachers. So they stopped and said, well, we want you to come up to the reception anyway. So we went up for the reception. And first thing that I just was all goggle-eyed, the men went by and pinned money on the bride. Money, bills. And she had bills all over. And then they had the wedding dinner. And her family provided that, but I think the groom's family provided the dinner the day before. Well, anyway, I was so stupid because my family were always pretty much teetotalers. And they were serving something that tasted pretty good. It was sweet. And Mother let me have one little glass, and she said, I don't want you to drink any more of that. Well, I know it was wine, you know, as I look back now, it was wine. And they celebrated at the house most all day. Then they went down to the schoolhouse, and they danced. And I mean, they danced all night. And I got to dance.
And that's what it was all for, is that one point, huh?
I learned about that. Another thing I learned that I've never seen it since. Mother went up into Coyote Park that summer, and there was the darlingest family there. Can't think of the name. But she was just real good to us. That little shack that Mother lived in was something. But anyway, we had a real bad lightning storm that day. And it wasn't any further, it wasn't as far as from here across the street. There was a big pine tree, and there were some cattle. And this lightning storm hit that tree and killed 7 cows. It was, and boy, it really cracked at the schoolhouse, you could imagine that. Mm. And Mother had warned me. She said, now, I don't want you putting anybody's... This was afterwards. We would be invited for Mexican food every so often, particularly tortillas. But she'd say to me, now, I don't want you wearing anybody else's hats or anything. And she knew that lice were very common. So one day we were over at this ladies, why can't I think of her name? And she looked at my hair and she says, Mrs. Ford, Virginia has lice. She could find some of the nits on my hair. Well, they never did find a louse on my head, but it had a lot of nits on the hair. Mm. So, what did they do to kill the lice? They saturated you with kerosene. But the kerosene had to sit out for a day or it would scald.
Oh, gosh.
So I never had a louse, but I had lots of nits. And Mother used to pull those things off my hair. But I don't know why. I must have been something about my hair that I still like.
Huh.
But that was...
What about the Indian people? How was your relationship with them when you went down to Ignacio, when your mom taught down there?
Well, got along very well. We didn't have a lot of Indians in school at the time. Hmm. Mother had Frances Buck, who was Buckskin Charlie's daughter, in school. Mother enjoyed her a lot. I remember we had a boy whose name was Willie Naranjo, and he was in high school, and he'd come up off the reservation. But Mother was always very particular that we had no animosity toward different races. She never would let us say a dirty Mexican or something like that, you know. A lot of people do. But she was very particular. We never looked on people as racist. Hmm. Which I'm awfully glad she did.
Mm-hmm.
Well, to finish the story of that summer, we were invited, I don't know where, Anyway, they were having a wake. I didn't know about wakes. But they'd celebrate a wake a year after a death. And I'll never forget it. They tied a goat up and strung it up and killed it. And butchered it. They had that meat there that night. That just about ruined me. I
almost turned into a vegetarian after that.
But they would, they sang, and I think they prayed. But it was a celebration, a wake from the memory. It was called Memory Wake. Oh, I'd never seen any of that stuff before. In fact, I haven't seen it since. So I got a liberal education out there.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad I had that experience. But you know, there are a lot of our Spanish families yet that the groom's parents buy the bride's clothes.
Do you know where that tradition comes from at all? Did you ever?
No, it came from Mexico and Spain. Because we had a boy that was working at the Presbyterian Church, and he was marrying a girl from Mexico. He had worked in Mexico. And he was telling me that he had to buy. He was engaged to me, and he was going to have to buy his bride's wedding dress and all. And I had Abinelda Martinez, who lives now here 2 blocks, worked for me for a long time. And she had a whole house full of boys, and she bought those boys' bride's clothes, and she fixed the reception for them. But one of them, it was written up in the paper just the other day, he works for Ptolemy. Very intelligent boy. He and his wife, and he married a Spanish girl. But they did it the Anglo way. The girl's parents furnished the wedding dress, and they also furnished the reception. And Mrs. Martinez was David Martinez. Was just real insulted that she didn't get to buy her wedding dress.
Hmm. Traditions are pretty thick, aren't they? They stay with you pretty long. You know, a traditional family.
Yes.
It's something that's in there and...
Apparently so. Now this Mrs. Martinez, Abinelda Martinez, is a darling person. Immaculately clean.
Hmm.
And she had 11 children, three daughters. But she felt it was her duty, and still she did housework for a living. Her husband didn't do it a great deal. Yeah. But that was her responsibility.
Well, there's quite a lot of that Mexican influence over in Fogosa Springs, though, that whole country.
Yes.
Is pretty tight with that. But you know, when I lived over there, you never noticed anything. You got along with everybody. I never had any problems. It seems like that everybody just seems to get along just fine.
Did you know any of the Talabantes?
I know that name, but I don't know if I knew him personally or not.
Or Larges?
Hmm.
Tony Large.
I didn't know Tony.
Well, that was the couple that were married.
Hmm.
All about the Talabantes. Tony Large. I got to go to their wedding reception. And we remained good friends when my mother went into town. They moved into town. They were always real. See, my mother was county superintendent for a while over there, too.
Mm.
So she was all over the whole county.
That's great. Well, how did the Depression affect you and your mom and your family?
Well, I had gotten my 2 years of college, and mother taught out on the Piedra for a while. She didn't teach for a while. My brother worked for the highway department. And she lived with him after he came home. That was after the Depression. The Depression was pretty rough. I was teaching in Pagosa, and a lot of us teachers didn't get to go back because they didn't have money. And we were cut from $85 a month to $64.50 a month for salary when the Depression was. And then I was fortunate because my mother had lived around there, and Mr. Hirsch knew the family so well that when my warrants were registered, I had no trouble. He would cash my warrant. But the teachers that weren't locals would have to register their warrants.
What is it? What's the warrant?
Their check.
Okay.
And there was one man over there by the name of Gus Nelson that must have had quite a lot of money. And he would buy these warrants for the teachers. And I don't remember how much he discounted them, but he discounted them quite a little bit. So it made it hard on the teachers. And that was all over. I've heard ever so many of the teachers of that era tell about having registered warrants, how hard it was because...
So you get your paycheck and you weren't able to cash it?
They didn't have any money.
Gosh.
The school district didn't have any money.
Terrible.
That made it real hard.
Well, I bet everything got cut back, though. You didn't have your supplies, you didn't have... anything new to work with?
That's right. And then when I started teaching out here on the base, I made up my mind I wanted to teach in Durango. And I had already been warned that if I wanted to teach in Durango, the only way I could do it was prove myself in the rural school first.
And was this during the Depression that you moved over to here?
I moved over here in 1935.
Okay.
So that was just post.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it was recuperation, is what it was. And I taught for $75 a month, 9 months.
And then the fear of World War II had to be coming in about then, didn't it?
It came in 1941.
Right.
I didn't go to school. I got my 2-year certificate in 1929. See, I was younger than I should have been.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't afford to. Yes, I went one more year in the summertime to Greeley. And then I got my 3-year life certificate. But there was a time in there. I got that right after I got my 2-year. But then there was a time in there I couldn't afford to go to school, not even in the summertime. And then in 40, was it 41? There were 4 of us decided we'd like to go to California to go to school for the summer. We went out to the University at Berkeley for 6 weeks.
And did you drive out there or
go
out on trains?
We drove. We got an apartment for 4 of us. And we went to school for 6 weeks. And then all but one of the girls was married while we were out there. She had been engaged to her husband for some time. But another one joined us. We went back the second year. That was 42. And the war had started. And no, I'm wrong. It was 40 and 41. But I came back. But I had started working in Durango. So I had enough money so I could. I went back to school in the summertime. And I got my degree in 43. But I had to do it by summers.
Was that a pretty scary time when you heard Pearl Harbor being attacked? And was there, you know, you hear this a lot of the fear that people thought that was going to be any time that Japan was going to be coming over here.
Well, I can remember we talked about it that particular day. And at least the group I was around were appalled that it had happened. But they seemed to have quite a lot of faith in our country and all. And, of course, all the boys were drafted. So many of them were drafted. They always published the numbers of the boys that were going to have to go next, as they had registered them, their name could be in paper. Everybody watched those papers to see who had to go next. My husband didn't get to go. We weren't married. And he was drafted and had been passed here, and he went up to Pueblo. And they rejected him because he had a heart murmur. And that just, he called me, because everybody thought we'd get married. And I said, no, I will not get married if he goes to war until he comes back. And he called me, and I said, well, what's the news? He says, I'm not good enough for him. He was just killed. But he couldn't go.
Well, the United States was, that time, it was so bonded, weren't they? I mean, everybody worked together for that cause.
Of course, we had rationing and all those things. Food stamps. I was fortunate. A family that I had boarded with out in the country were living up here, a part of, I can't imagine. What's that big place up on the Florida as you go out? Well, they were living on the Perkins Ranch. Anyway.
Is this that new development out there?
Yes.
Edgemont?
Yes.
Okay.
And they had their own cattle, and they had their own vegetables. So they brought me meat and vegetables, so I didn't have to buy it. But a lot of people really had to skip. And Barney and I were married in 1944, and we couldn't afford gasoline, couldn't get gasoline.
Yeah, you had, what was it, what are those things called, it? Tickets, or what is it? You had books?
Uh-huh, ration books.
Ration books. And you were only allowed so many gallons of gas, or,
yeah, that's right.
Or a pair of shoes, and
I don't remember the shoes, but the tires were critical. And so when we were married, we took our honeymoon by train and went to Denver.
All right.
And what have you been reading?
Oh, I've been reading the paper all about the Hantavirus.
But we had, when we were married, he was working for Jackson Hardware. And we were married at a friend's home over here on 3rd Avenue.
Yeah.
Instead of going to the church, I had a garden wedding. And he worked for Jackson Hardware. And they came to the wedding and went back to the store and released all the crew. And they met us at the train as we started to leave. Showered us with rice, but good. But the craziest thing, they had tied 3 5-gallon cans.
New ones. And they were hard to buy in those days.
And they had them shoved under. We took the parlor car. We went in the parlor car. They had them shoved under the train. So when the train pulled out, here came these crazy cans. Just bump, bump. Down the track. Barney looked at that. Those things are expensive. And he took his pocket knife and cut them off. Then we got to Chaba. My cousin was my bridesmaid, and she got off at Chaba because my uncle was over there. And after we got past Chaba, there was a black porterhouse. And he had known Barney for ages. And he came and he called Barney back to his little cupola. He said, I got something. And he gave him some beer that he had special for him. He says, I couldn't give it to you while that lady was here. Then, between Barney's twin brother and my brother, and I don't know who else, and I don't know what they paid to have it done. We were going by Pullman into Denver, and wasn't the same porter.
No, he wouldn't go on from there. But
anyway, he was supposed to give the orders, I guess.
Well,
that
he was supposed to do it.
They were supposed to short seat our bed. And he told Barney, he says, I can't do it. I can't do that to you. So they didn't get that done to us anyway.
Oh, goodness.
And the friends that I lived with out on the Blanco, where I went with him to break the stove for this family, where he was a soil conservation man. And they had put him up in northern Colorado, I think it was Wiggins, and I had written them and told them we were coming to Denver. And they came down to Denver to meet us while we were up there on our honeymoon.
All right. How long were you up in Denver then?
About a week, weren't we?
About a week.
Oh, maybe 4 or 5 days. Then we came back.
We took the bus back. You couldn't.
No, we took the bus from Alamosa.
Yeah, I guess that's right.
Because I wanted to go back right and see Mother. Of course, the little train was gone by then.
Couldn't get enough gasoline to drive up there.
Well, how did those rationing books work? You had that you could get it like X amount of gallons, but how long was that supposed to last you?
That you only got so many gallons.
I don't remember how that was.
So
you just get any more for a month.
Okay, that's what I was needing. Yeah.
I know that.
Every month you got your rations.
The people who had to make their living by traveling really had a hard time. And I know I can remember buying gas off of people who did not have to use their gas.
Well, there was a lot of finagling on people that didn't even have cars would get stamps and give them to other people, you know. Because that was the only way they could get their gasoline.
So as far as any kind of shipping or freighting or anything like that, that was all done by train. You didn't have any kind of vehicles that were transporting much during that period.
Well, they had a certain amount of transportation companies. And,
there was especially, bus.
We did in here in Durango because we had a little plant here. You know, Jack Lee was making those parts for the Army. And so transportation companies that was hauling that had...
Well, they hauled it instead of shipping it.
Yeah. Well, they shipped it, but you had to ship it by truck line or train. There was a truck line between here and Alamosa.
Were you guys around when the smelter was in operation?
Oh, yes.
I was. My father worked there with it.
Did he?
When he first came to this country.
And when he first came, he
worked... See, both of his parents were immigrants.
Ah. From?
Germany.
My father was from Bavaria. My mother was from Bavaria, Germany. My father was from Austria. But they were married here in Durango in 1900 on New Year's Day.
Honey, her being a history major, sure, your dad's a birth certificate. We took a trip to, we've been over Europe 3 times, 4 times. And the first time, we had the first German exchange teacher that came over here was sent to my room because I had a little girl that was German that didn't speak English very well yet. Mm. Well, we became very good friends. And after she went back, I kept correspondence with her. And she married, I don't know, 2 or 3 years afterwards. And in 1976, she came over here, her family, she and her family, she had a son and a daughter, and the whole family did. And they could get good rates, because that was our centennial. Then the next year, we went over there. They lived in a little town named Kempton. And they were fantastic hosts.
You talked about records. Those people had records back in those days.
Well, let me get to that. And so, among other things, Barney thought he knew where his father had been born. He wasn't sure. So these friends said, well, we'll take you down to her place. And it was a 6-hour trip.
By car?
By car. And we went down. Gertrude didn't go that day.
No.
And Barney was curious, and Herman said, maybe we could, and we knew his father had been reared Catholic. And so we went to the Catholic church.
She was the only little church in that town.
Oh, the little pink church.
The only pink church I've ever seen.
Yeah, really, except maybe in Las Vegas.
And Herman went in, and he said, Barney asked about his father. And the priest was busy because it was the first day of school. And he said, and Herman said, these people came all the way from the United States of America to get this information. So the priest went, and he had to do something about getting school started. And he came back. They had big books about that thing, leather-bound.
Yeah, leather-bound.
Leather-bound. And Barney had given Herman the information that he knew about his father's age, birth, and all. And that priest looked up and pulled one of these great big books out. And he had the year.
Within 10 minutes, he had this information.
And he showed it to Barney.
This was a copy.
And I said, I think it would be nice if we could take
that
back
with us. This is picture of my father's baptismal
baptismal record. So Herman said, well, I can't, well, first I said to Herman, let's get a copy of that because maybe your family would like to have
their
it.
Their paper wasn't big enough.
So this priest carried that book over to the bank and had it Xeroxed. And Herman said, I can't read it, but Dirk can.
So then she kept the information and translated that into this English
Into the English language.
You know, here. The year.
How wonderful. And
the number of the house on the mountain. And all Catholic, male, legitimate. I said, what if it hadn't been legitimate? And he said, oh, that's a common thing over here. There's a lot of them. Be, we've been marked a legitimate child. And the parents.
Wow, how wonderful.
The whole thing is on here, and this was 1869.
Wow. That's fantastic.
So I've been kind of proud of this because these people, now my mother was born, she was younger than my father. He was 17 when he came here. He had his training, his vocational training. He was trained in forestry. You know, over there, if you don't go on to university or college, you got to go to a vocational. Well, it's a training school, because they don't want anybody to be idle over there. They don't want anybody to not have a trade. So it's a trade school. They all have to go. And I still do, as far as I know.
So what made your father come to the United States?
My mother, his parents passed away. And his older sister was... We had a brother and a sister that came over here before that. His sister was an opera singer. She was trained in Vienna. And they didn't get along. There were the only two that were left there. So he decided to come to the United States and see if he could find his brothers and sisters. And, you know, he never did find them. Since then, we have found some families that we think probably were related, but have nothing. He lost all of his papers coming over on the boat. And he traveled with a Swede.
What year did he come over here?
He came in 18, he was 17 years old, so it was 1869, so it would be...
'87,
something
like that. And what brought him into Durango?
What brought him into Durango, because the immigration department in Washington, you know, took care of charge of him, and they sent him out, and they were doing a lot of mining, so they were sent to Silverton area. He and his partner, he came over with a Swede, and neither one of them could speak their language together. They traveled all the way.
Oh, no.
And he went to work for the Camford Mine up in out of Uray. You've heard of the Camford Mine. Uh-huh. I'm sure that's where... And he got sick there, and they put him on the train and brought him to Durango, to the hospital here. They said it was high altitude fever or something. I don't know what they called it at that time, because it was a hospital here. And he never went back. He went to work for the old Porter Fuel Company. I don't know if you've ever heard of it or not, but it was... Wildcat Canyon out here was one of the large, real old coal companies. And he was
Coke.
Coke, yeah, they made Coke.
For the smelter.
And he was a foreman for them, and then when they closed that down, why, he went to work for the smelter. And in 1903, my mother and father were married in 1900 on New Year's Day here in Durango, and that's when the Utes and the United States traded some land out for Ignacio, and when they traded this land was available, and my father homesteaded a ranch in what they call Cottonwood Canyon out there. It's just decided.
That's where you're at. Okay, this is how we get this correlation.
Yeah.
All right.
And that's where I was born, raised. Lived there until Big Dad. He had a dairy farm there, and my mother made butter and sold it to Durango. Yeah.
His mother used to make anywhere from 50 to 100 pounds of butter a week. It was hooked up so it was electric, wasn't it?
No, we didn't have electricity, sure. But we had gasoline power.
Oh, that's right.
He had a shop. My father was... And again,
they had a barrel about so big.
He had a blacksmith shop there, and he used to do the plowshare sharpening and all this kind of stuff for the neighbors in the area. And we milked about 20 head of cows twice a day.
Gosh. And how big a family did you have?
Six children.
Thank goodness, huh?
I had two girls and four boys.
Goodness.
And I lived there until
38.
Something like that. 36. I went to work for the Jackson Hardware Company.
37.
Okay. Fall of 37, October 37. I spent 21 years in the hardwood business there. I ended up with, I was a stockholder, company part owner, and we sold it.
All right. So what was it like when that smelter was running over here? Did that put off a lot of smoke
Question about it, you bet.
People out of the city town always complained they couldn't keep their sheets.
But it was the town. I mean, I don't know how many people it employed, but half of the town of Durango, I think, was employed over at the old smelter over there. And the mining, it was a lot of coal mining went on here. Lots of coal mining.
And you see they closed that. And then the Vanadium came in.
And that was run for 5 years over there.
And the Vanadium was right there at the same place?
Yeah, they hauled that all out, you know, if you, maybe you knew about that.
Yeah, I heard not long back.
They cleaned up the... Tailings pond.
Boy, they did that. They wouldn't use that dirt, didn't they, in a lot of places throughout town, and dear.
And I went to work for, I went to work for the Jackson Hardware Store. That was a wagon manufacturing company and the biggest hardware store in town. And I spent 21 years in there. Then I left there and worked for the Zork Hardware Company as a jobber salesman. Hardware for about 10 years.
One of the most fun courses I ever took. I went back to Greeley, and it was called Industries of Colorado. We went from Greeley, it was all by bus. Let's see, I think we had, no, it was all travel. We went by bus to Fort Morgan. There we went through the meat industry. Went on out to brush, and that was the big cattle feeding industry. We went south from there to Colorado Springs. And for some reason, I hadn't been aware of the fact that there was quite an oil field out there east, north and east of Colorado.
Yeah, that was
Springs.
The first oil field in Colorado.
But we went through that. Stayed all night in Colorado Springs, and at that time the Alexander Film Company was there, and they showed us how they made films, and that's when I learned more about the Disney thing than I'd ever known before. And we also went through the Tip Bit Company.
That was the drug.
They showed how they made the bits, and then from there we went down to Canyon City. And we didn't go through the prison, but they showed us where it was. They took us across the Royal Gorge. Then we went up to Salida. And Salida was quite a coal country at one time, too. We stayed all night in Salida. No, wait a minute, we went to Pueblo first. I forgot about Pueblo. And that was one of the highlights. We went through the... CF and Iron. And Barney had been over before when they opened the tube mill. And I thought, gee, I'd like to do it. They took us through the tube mill in the CF and I. And
yeah, I had an invitation to their opening dinner. It was a great big to do, I'll tell you.
And then they took us through the sand dunes. From Salida we went to the sand dunes. And then from the sand dunes, we came on over Wolf Creek. And the Forest Service met us on the top of Wolf Creek and lectured all the way down to Costa Springs. And we stopped just very shortly. I was mad at them because I felt they made a mistake. They didn't take us over the spring. And of course, there's a lot of people who don't know the Pagosa Springs exists.
Right.
And we came out over here and stayed all night. In fact, we were here two nights, I believe.
We went
through the Vanadium Corporation. And of course, we had lectures all these ways. Then from here, we went by bus up to Silverton. We stayed at the Grand Imperial. And they took us through one of the gold mines. I didn't know that those places were just drenched with water all the time.
Sure, but water seeps.
The miners came out, and when they came out, they had their hats and their slickers off. And the miners that came out, they gave us their slippers to put on. So we went back into the mine where they were actually mining. And they had had just set another dynamite charge. But they waited till we got out close enough that we could hear it and see part of the dust from it, of this mine. We stayed all night in Silverton that night. And then the next morning, well, we were there in Silverton a day, but when we left Silverton, they took us over to Montrose for breakfast. And then we went up to the Black Canyon of the Gunnison. I laughed about that. I had the craziest thing yet. A lot of them had been picking up souvenirs all the way, because there were about 35 of us. And I didn't bother to pick up anything. I found the cutest little rock up there in the Black Canyon. I picked it up. And I showed it to the ranger. He says, you know, you can't take anything out of the National Park. That's right. It was just a little rock. Well, we went from there over to Colorado.